The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome back to the 750. I am your O, RJ Ochoa. He is your 7-5, two-time Super Bowl champion, college football Hall of Famer. And just like the rest of us, super annoyed, super upset, super pissed off. The one and only Tony Casillas. TC, what up? Nobody had three sacks. Nobody did it.
Yeah, you know, the sun comes up and hopefully I can, I can drink my coffee. So I think people just need to relax. It was definitely one of the most disappointing ends of the Cowboys season I can remember in a long time.
You know, it's been, so we're recording this Tuesday morning, a little bit earlier than usual. Shout out to Tony for being an MVP. Thank you, Bear, for adjusting to my schedule. Are you pissed off or just sad?
I think of initially, then just being in that building and watching the game and just kind of seeing exactly what San Francisco needed to do to beat Dallas and what Dallas needed to do to beat San Francisco. You know, Dallas didn't do it. They started off very flat. First drives on both parts on the San Francisco 49ers. And it just seemed the transparency of what this team was in the last, I would say, 4 to 5 weeks of the season, reared its ugly head. And, you know, I think that was more deflated than anything, is that they just underachieved so much. And again, I think that we kind of were in denial because we did see this and we thought maybe they would play up against a very good football team. And I think there were so many 49er fans in that building and just really didn't give the Cowboys fans a chance to get into it. Sometimes that's not their whole responsibility, but they played exactly the way we thought that, well, the worst nightmare, I would say. And I think for me, that is so riveting when it comes to a team, because you hear the noise around you, you build your identity, and to come out there and have that type of lackluster performance. As I mentioned, RJ, I've watched a lot of football since I've been out, and certainly the Cowboys, and the expectations are every year, this team always falls short of what Jerry builds his brand. And it was just one of those, is amazing, amazing underachievement in my eye.
So you've seen the movie The Replacements, right? With with Keanu Reeves, right? Mm-hmm.
Gene Hackman,
right, of course. There's a scene where the team in the movie is, they're having a conversation, and Gene Hackman, he says, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen to you out on the field, whatever? Like, what are you most scared of on the field? And one of the offensive guards is joking around. He says, bees. And they're all like, oh, yeah, bees are terrifying. And then Keanu Neal, Shane Falco, he says, quicksand. And one guy's like, oh, hell yeah, quicksand's a scary mother. And, like, I always remember that. But then he starts like, no, he's like, quicksand, like, you know, during the game. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. one thing goes wrong and then another. And you kind of just start to sink into it like quicksand. And you mentioned the first drive. It kind of felt like that. Like that first drive, San Francisco's just moving, first down. It kind of felt like, oh, crap. Like this, obviously, we know they lost, but it kind of felt like in that moment, like this, they might be, they might be frauds. And you mentioned, like, they played who they, up to who they were. You said the last 4 or 5 weeks. I think we could go, You know, the last time they were elite was the game-winning touchdown in New England. That was the last moment that they were truly elite. They went on by, they came out, they went to Minnesota, they won with Cooper Rush, and then it was just, you know, it was lose or survive, or beat a bad team. And I've used that F word a lot on some other podcasts throughout the season, talking about different teams, frauds. I saw you reply to a tweet I had on Monday night. Obviously, we're recording Tuesday morning. The Arizona Cardinals lost on Monday night in the wild card round, the super wild card round, Tony, to the Los Angeles Rams. The Cardinals lost four of their last five games to get into the playoffs and then lost their wild card game against their division rival. Their only win in that stretch was against the Cowboys. I 100% believe that the Cardinals are frauds, but I mean, if you're just being fair, that, I mean, the Cowboys are bigger frauds. Like, that's who they are. Like you said, they played up to who they were. That's a heavy word. I get it. But like they completely played like frauds on Sunday against San Francisco.
I think it was I would say fake, as I kind of like to use the word, but you know, the Arizona Cardinals, again, they were just you know, they were playing on a thread, and we just thought that just thread just came unraveled when they played the Rams. I mean, hit them in the mouth, and we kind of saw that unravel. And I think we saw that with the Cowboys. And I think it's easy to get all caught up in the 49ers, you know, not being a top seed team and Dallas the 3 seed. But you look at the record of teams that had winning records. I believe they were 6-6. Well, they were 6-0 versus the NFC East, and against everyone else, they were 6-6. So, what does that say about the difficulty of the schedule? But look, I think that as a player, I just know this, that when you're in a big game like that and that happens, those chain of events happen. Mm-hmm. Offense takes the ball down and stuffs it down their throat and scores a touchdown. And then the offense comes out and can't do anything. They had 7 yards at one point, and it's like, I mean, the statistics are ridiculous. I mean, this is a team that was the number one offense in the NFL. And now you look at the second half of the season, it was so far away, removed from what they did. This is this team. And you know, to me, that's the hardest thing for me is like the penalties and just continuous of just really just breaking down and not focusing on things. And to me, that is Achilles heel, RJ, because I know as a team, you have to be locked in. You got to be focused. You got to figure out a way. Someone's got to ignite your ass and like, okay, we're not going to do this. We're going to stop this noise right now and move forward. Never did anything like that.
You know, I'm not like advocating for penalties, but like the Thanksgiving loss against the Raiders, you know, you got a billion pass interference penalties. Like, again, not a good thing, but I can understand those a little bit more, right? Hey, you know, you're running, you're fighting, you're playing, you know, sometimes PI happens. So that's just the nature of the game. But the pre-snap penalties, like you cannot false. Like at one point, the Cowboys had back-to-back false starts at home in a playoff game. Randy Gregory, you can't cross the neutral zone. Like you can't do that. I mean, these are the penalties that are just so silly. You mentioned the offense not showing up. And that's where, I mean, this is going to be a long offseason. And that's where I think maybe we've been the most shaken is that the thing we thought we could trust the most, you know, really, really didn't show up. And then, I mean, I'm very curious. I was really excited to record this with you today. I'm very curious for your perspective as somebody who's lived the life. These guys come out and they just completely and totally, you know, fail, right? You know, let's just be straight up about it. They fail. And then they come out afterwards, and I get it. Emotions are high. They're upset. Their season's over, whatever. And all they do is point fingers. The officials, refereeing, whatever, penalties. No, dude, you had all the chances in the world and you blew it. I think it's really, 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 really weak of the team to come out. And I put that blame on Mike McCarthy. I put it on Dak Prescott. I hate to put it on Dak Prescott, but I do. They're the ones coming out. And then Dak even, like, you know, giving fans kudos for throwing beer bottles at officials. Like, that was such a low moment for all of them.
And officiating, without a doubt, has been inconsistent, but you cannot blame it on their faults on the officiating. There were so many things in that game that you can put the blame on coaching, players. mismanagement of the clock, and just the list goes on and on. And as much as I wanted to be a fan in that game, and I was into it because, look, it's playoffs. You're there for a reason. I never felt like the score is indicative of how bad San Francisco beat the Cowboys. I never got this feeling that they were going to take the ball down and score, even if they would have had 1 second left. I never got that feeling. And look, this is very true. As a player, you get that feeling like, you know what, we're not going to be able to do it. They did it the whole game. San Francisco, all of a sudden they said, okay, we're going to let you, we're going to keep everything. We'll let you get to 10, 15 yards. We're not going to let you score. And I think that's the way the whole feeling was in that game. And you know, as a player, you just got to come out and say, they beat our ass. And that's what happened. I mean, defensively, you know, when Nick Bosa went out, RJ, I thought, oh, okay, well, hey, maybe they can get a break. No. And look, the offensive line was just, it was trash. And look, I think those guys, they watch that tape and it's like, I wouldn't even want to watch it, but they just got wore out. I mean, that's the kind of game that was, and it never was close. The running game, no running game at all. Not even trying to get the ball to even try to feature any your playmakers. You know, CeeDee Lamb, I thought you should try to get the ball to him more, like Deebo Samuel, maybe to Tony Pollard. None of that. It was just very pedestrian. Okay, we're going to try this and that. And this never worked. It just never got this feeling that this team was in the game.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
You mentioned Nick Bosa obviously left the game. And we talk about chances. I tweeted this out on Monday. The Cowboys got the ball at their own 16-yard line with 2 minutes and 42 seconds left. They had all 3 timeouts. And granted, their own 16-yard line. But, you know, hey, 84 yards. That's, you know, this is supposed to be the best offense in the NFL. They had all 3 timeouts. San Francisco was down Nick Bosa and down Fred Warner. So you're down their 2 best defenders and you can't move the ball at all. I mean, that's it. Yeah. And like, I don't want to disparage any Cowboys player, but you're right. Why is CeeDee Lamb not more involved? Why is Tony Pollard not more involved? I love Dalton Schultz and Cedric Wilson, but like, you cannot, that cannot be what you go out swinging with in a playoff game. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's very, very frustrating that they did it again, you know, and all season long, I don't know if we lied to ourselves, if they tricked us, if they fooled us, if they hoodwinked us or whatever, but I mean, they were becoming this team, obviously. And, you know, we all were kind of aware of that. And San Francisco was, you know, peaking and not a great matchup for them and took advantage of them. But you're right. Like, it was not, it was actually kind of sad to watch them, you know, in that last drive. And then the QB draw, dude. I mean, I want to be very clear. Now, I've said this already a bunch of places. I have defended Mike McCarthy a lot this season. I, you know, was buying a lot of what he was selling. I'm out. Like, I cannot support the QB draw at the very end. I think you've got to know, and the lack of preparation, the lack of understanding. And I put that blame on Dak too. You got to know to hand the ball to the official. I mean, there's a lot of players in the NFL who know that rule. I mean, if you're the franchise guy, if you're being paid all this money, you have to know that rule. And if you don't know that rule, then when your coach or your offensive coordinator calls that play, they got to tell you, hey, you know, when after you pick up X yards, get down, give the ball to the official, just a total collapse, total failure from everybody involved. Your thoughts on Mike McCarthy and the blame he deserves for all this, I guess.
Well, how about the fake punt that they
executed?
And they try to play cat and mouse with San Francisco. And they end up getting the back them up to first and 15. And this is a team that hadn't done anything offensively.
And they wasted time that they would later
these
on
these are
need.
Crucial yards that they have to have. They cannot afford to back them up. That was crazy. And that play, that draw play, there's a couple plays in the game and they ran draws. I'm like, what did you just run that play? But that play right there, it's not a play that you just – that's your first time doing it. You practice these situations, two-minute situations, end-of-the-game situations. And as much as I want to agree with you, Mike McCarthy, your quarterback's got to be aware. Look, we're going to run this quarterback draw. We know how much time we have on the clock. I got to get the play ran and try to move it in and maybe not get – what do you get on that play? It was 15, I don't know how many yards. Maybe – instead of going to the was it 20, the 30, maybe, I don't know, where down in distance, where it was on the field. My point is that maybe just try to not get 10 yards, get maybe 6, and then that way spot it. And to me, that was just, you can look at the point of the officials. Oh, by the way, that official, didn't he run like 50 yards to spot the ball? I mean, it was kind of crazy. But anyways, that's here and there. It's not the official's fault.
No, and exactly everybody wanted to blame the greed.
Yeah, you know the situation. You know what you got to do, and they didn't execute it.
No, I mean, a lot of people wanted to blame the official for being –
I get tired of hearing that, too. People on social media, I mean, come on.
It's sad because a lot of people were saying – because these officials, they're elder gentlemen. You know what I mean? They're, you know, they got some 401ks. You know what I mean? These are guys, you know, they've been around the sun a couple of times. A lot of people saying, well, how come the NFL has this 60-year-old man having to run down? It's like, okay, fine, whatever. I mean, this is an argument for a different day. But you know what? That 60-year-old man calls every game. Like, that's the thing. Like, you know that that's the case. And so Dak Prescott comes out, and I'm with you. Like, Dak deserves all the criticism in the world for this. You know,
Dak, those 49 fans, they were clapping for that 60-year-old man.
But Dak comes out and says, you know, we practiced this. We trained for this moment. It's like, you clearly did not, because you would know if you did. Like, if you were really, really planning and preparing for the moment, you would have allotted for that. Like, is it weird that you have to allot for a 60-year-old referee to run down and spot the ball? Yeah, that's weird. But those are the rules. Like, that's the way the game works. You have to know that that's the case. And to your point, somebody has to say, and preferably this person would be Dak Prescott. But that's why I do put some fault on Kellen Moore and Mike McCarthy for also not, you know, instituting this knowledge. Somebody has to have a conversation when that QB draw is called and say, Dak, there are 14 seconds left. We don't have a single clock stoppage. Here is the situation. Like you just said, Tony, whatever you do, you've got 6-7 seconds. That's it. You got to run for 6-7 seconds and then you got to get down. But I mean, the moment, you know, Dak Prescott runs for 8 or 9 seconds, that's ruined. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no room for error in that sequence. It has to be executed flawlessly, which is why the call was dumb. A lot of people are still sitting here, well, the call was great. You know, they just didn't execute it properly. No, like, if you have to thread this needle with the season on the line, it's a dumb call. Just throw, I mean, I'm not saying Hail Marys are high probability, but throw two Hail Marys, give yourself a chance. Maybe you pick up a PI penalty. I mean, I would have much rather gone down that way than with the whimper that they ultimately did.
I just thought the lack of the preparation awareness on his part. And, you know, now we're, you know, since we're talking about Dak Prescott, I don't know what happened to him. I don't know what I understand he was under a lot of duress. I mean, they were coming after him all game long. But look, good quarterbacks, really elite quarterbacks, and we all agree he's not in that category yet. And he's a top 15 quarterback, but we defend him a lot. But they just didn't get enough play. And look, that's, you got to shoulder the blame. And there was times when you just got to will your team.
Yep.
You got to make the plays. But I mean, it goes both ways, because they get a positive play and then negate it with a holding penalty, offsides, whatever the case may be. And they could not, those are yards that are so crucial. They were hard to come by the whole game long. And he just kept shooting himself in the foot every time. And I'm thinking, get your ass in the huddle, talk about this, focus. Hell, call a timeout. You're going to the sideline. Someone needs to do some ass chewing. And it just seemed to me that, and look, I'm a Tyron Smith fan, but I don't, he struggled immensely in that game. And so did the interior part. And no one played well on that offensive side. And you know, defense gave him a chance to win. But there were times in the game, and Neville Gallimore, that the penalty with the hands to the face was crucial. But bad teams that aren't very good, that aren't training at that time or doing good things, those things happen. And just it was just a debacle all game long.
My last Dak point is this is going to be a really frustrating offseason because I love Dak and I have defended Dak a lot. And, you know, we've had discussions about Dak. I mean, I defended him on Twitter, other podcasts, whatever. It's a difficult offseason to defend Dak, not just because of what happened against Frisco, but because of the second half of the season. I mean, he was bad. And, you know, do I still believe that there's an elite quarterback in there? Sure, totally. But I mean, right now you're no longer making that argument off of data. You're making it partially off of hope, which is hard to prove. At the very end of the day, like whether not you, Tony, but you generally, whether you have believed that Dak is elite or not, the one thing that everyone has always agreed on, again, whether they support Dak or not, is that he's a great leader. That's been all we've ever heard. He's a great leader. He, you know, the guys rally around him, whatever. And that's why I hated that anybody blamed the officials. It really irked me that Dak was the one, because Dak, that you got to be different. Like people are saying, well, he's human, he has emotions. Totally, totally agree. But he's the quarterback. He's supposed to be the leader, and that's why I'm really concerned about Mike McCarthy. That's why I'm so out. There was a great point that Bobby Belt of the Fan brought up on 105.3 on Monday. That Dak has always kind of been the company guy. Like he's always kind of, you know, produced the message of the company. Like he was kind of, you know, he spoke like Jason Garrett when Jason Garrett was the head coach. Now he speaks like Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy's the one who's blaming officials. After the Cowboys lost to the Cardinals, Mike McCarthy came out and said, yeah, well, we were up against more than the Cardinals today, you know, talking about the referees. And that's where I'm really worried, because Mike McCarthy's culture seems to be a group of complainers and whiners and finger pointers, and that's not going to get anything done no matter who you're playing against.
I think the frustration just came out that instead of blaming things on his players, in which the company line, he just kind of goes there. And I don't know why a player will not come out publicly and basically say, it was us, it wasn't the officials. And you can't blame your deficiencies in your play all the time. I mean, there's a reason why this team was the most penalized offense in the National Football League, and they continue to do that. It's about breaking down. It's all about mental breakdowns and technique breakdowns and getting beat and not putting yourself – you're putting yourself in a position to make a football play, or technique and blocking and everything, the fundamentals is not being locked in. And – there's just overmatched at different places and positions. And, you know, look, Dak is, I don't want to say he's a company guy. I think that when I think of company guys, I think of Tony Romo. And I think that right now you want him to just kind of separate himself with that type of, you know, Tony Romo did some nice things. I'm not saying, I know he's your favorite all time cowboy, so I don't want to get you all upset this early morning, but he's got some things to look at. I don't know. It's a team that needs to run the damn ball. And I really think you can't make Dak right now a passer only. You got to get him help. They got to figure out what they need to do offensively. And, you know, to me and that, and the Kellen, to your point about Kellen Moore, they didn't do that enough. They did not try to loosen their defense up whatsoever.
Dude, so on that point, so Zeke comes out as soon as the game is over and says that he played the season, part of the season with a partially torn PCL. Torn,
right.
Now, there's one
Why
part
are you
of
saying
it,
that now?
So actually, I'm glad you said that, because so there are two elements to this, and everybody talked about the second, but the first one that kind of went over people's heads is all season long, over the second half of the season, when Zeke was hurt, and we knew Zeke was hurt, to be very clear. This isn't like a complete surprise. What was Zeke's line whenever he met with the media? It's fine. I'm good. I'm totally fine. I'm totally good. You know, whatever. I got the brace on. I'm totally good. literally the first time he meets with the media, as soon as the season ends, well, I had a partially torn PCL. Dude, what are you doing? Like, you know, like you.
It's just like giving your excuse for not being 100%.
That's exactly what this looks like.
And look, I'm not trying, but the thing about it is, a player, if you're out on the damn field, hey, you're good to go. You cannot. And look, I think he's a tough dude. I mean, he's a great blocking running back. I think right now he's better at that than he is at running. I'll give him props for that. But to come out and the first thing you do, excuse, is like, okay, you guys didn't know this, but I played with a torn PCL, right?
I want to be very clear. Zeke is, like you said, he's very strong. He's incredible. I could not play on a partially torn PCL. I'm not saying that. And is it a little bit unfair that Zeke's getting criticized for this? Yeah, but that's the nature of this business. And so to come out, like you're saying, very first thing and say, well, I play with a partially torn PCL. You know, Ben Roethlisberger just played his last game, what we think, in the NFL. And that's been Ben's MO his whole career. Ben has loved to tell people, well, I'm hurt, I'm dealing with this. Like, he's loved to try and garner sympathy that way. And that's exactly what the Zeke comment reminded me of. I mean, like, and again, like, Zeke, respect. I mean, you're a warrior. You can play through that. Like, that is impressive. But at what cost? I mean, you know, you can make an argument, Tony, that another Tony is a better running back than Zeke at 100%, right?
Oh, like, yeah. We've said that.
So, like, I mean, everybody has said that. Everybody except for the Dallas Cowboys is willing to at least acknowledge that Tony Pollard is sometimes better than Zeke Elliott, although he's actually better than him all the time as a runner, not as a pass blocker, to your point. And so, okay, if Tony Pollard is better than 100% Zeke, why is a less than 100% Zeke being prioritized in the offense? What's more, Tony, is even if, fine, if you're the Cowboys, if you're Kellen Moore, you're McCarthy, you're Jerry, whoever, even if you somehow believe that Zeke is an elite runner still, I disagree with that, but even if you believe that, why did you give him the ball 18 times in Philadelphia last week in what was a meaningless game? I know they had to win. I know they had to improve their you know, seed positioning and everything. I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, poo-poo all of that, but that game did not mean an enormous amount for the Cowboys. And they obviously knew that Zeke was ailing, and they gave him 18 carries. The level of incompetence there.
And yeah, we haven't heard that from Zeke all season long about having a torn a ligament in his knee. And I think that was just the facade. We talked about that last week. Again, we wanted to drink the Cowboy Kool-Aid and think that, man, look what they did against the Eagles. And it looked to me that, you know, Zeke was fine. And everyone plays with injuries. Look, I mean, I played with injuries my whole season. I mean, that's what happens in a National Football League. But, you know, when you search for reasons why you're not doing this and that, it was just inability for him to run. It's inability for the offensive line to block. You know, there's nothing there. So it's a combination. I'd rather just come out and say that instead of the first things you say is officials and we're playing with injury. And like I said, everyone's injured. I mean, J.J. Watt last night played in a game and hell, had his whole shoulder rebuilt and he's out there playing. And but, you know, to the point of where they're at and where this team is, and you go back and you look at the 17 games and one and done, you know, there's going to be some decision-making offseason. Do I think, you know, my next question is, you know, a lot of people are like asking them, well, Mike McCarthy, will he be back next year? And are they going to make a change? No, they're not going to make a change. And if they did make a change, the guy that they should go with is not the offensive coordinator, it's Dan Quinn, if they were going to go that route. But, look, I think it's just a situation where I think everyone is upset, but you kind of saw it coming. You just didn't see it. You didn't want to believe that it would be one and done in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, and I mean, it's strange that they were the only home team to lose in the wild card round. Like, they just kind of did it in the most annoying way possible. You know what I mean? Which is why people.
I just like everybody talking about the scenario of them playing. Well, the Eagles, they're going to lose, so Dallas is going to play the Tampa Bay. I'm like, dude, you need to worry about this damn game.
I mean, and that's the thing. Like, so after the Cowboys lost in week one, there was a soundbite from Dak Prescott that was picked up where he told Tom Brady, yeah, we'll see you again. And obviously, had the Cowboys won, they would be going to Tampa this week. And everybody was saying, oh, you know, wow, this is about to happen, whatever. I don't know if you remember this, Tony. But in 2015, when a different Tony, not Tony Pollard, you mentioned him earlier, when Tony Romo was hurt, the Cowboys lost at home to the New England Patriots. And Romo, after the game, and he's just kind of sweats because, again, he was hurt at the time. He walked up to Tom Brady at midfield and said, "We'll see you in February." And, you know, obviously, you know, kind of joked about how they would meet them in the Super Bowl. Hey, Cowboys, stop doing that. Like, you look really stupid. You know what
it's
I mean?
Like, Tom, where am I going to see you? Am I see you on a cruise, or am I going to see you in Cabo?
I mean, and
we're
that's
gonna see you in Paris.
That's the thing,
on
man.
A damn football field.
Like, I know that I'm still riding some emotions from all this, but I don't want to hear any of that for a long time. I mean, a really long, I don't want to hear, and I don't mean you, but like, I don't want to hear the Cowboys come out. I don't want to hear them in Oxnard in the summer, or, you know, Jerry on the radio in September and getting hyped and talking about the Super Bowl. Like, shut the hell up. Like, y'all,
oh, come on, you know, Jerry, that's never going to happen.
Okay. Maybe not Jerry. I mean, obviously that's a little impractical, but you know what I mean? Like, all you have done is fail and collapse. And so, like, none of your players should be walking up to Tom Brady and saying, "Hey, we'll see you whenever." Do you realize, Tony, that, I mean, I know, you know, but Tom Brady is the GOAT. He's the greatest player of all time. His entire football resume, like, people love to say, well, Tom Brady's been playing forever. Tom Brady's entire football resume has happened after the Cowboys last won a Super Bowl.
That's crazy.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like he has been doing this forever and ever and ever and ever, and never in this stretch of time have the Cowboys even made a title game. And so,
that's
like,
sad.
That's what I'm saying. Like Dak, you look silly, you know, like, and yeah, people will say, well, he said it week one and he was confident in himself. Good. But, you know, like, quit writing checks that you can't cash. And that's who this
bad.
Team is.
I feel bad for the fans. I think that there's been such a, and I said this, I don't know what I was doing. I was talking to someone about Jerry and I think it was Mike Ducey. I did something with him and I said, it's hard for this team to live up to what Jerry is branding, the marketing, everything that he's putting out there. And everyone falls into that. It's very hypnotic. And that's what they do great. But it just seems to me that when it comes to crashing in, when everybody's excited, they're spending money, they're buying, you know, thinking about the postseason playoffs, and this happens, it's like a freaking knife. And look, I think it's just a game. But I think that's what fans do. They kind of, on Monday, it's like, oh my God, I don't want to go to work. It's just, I'm having a bad day, because that's their emotion. That's their fans. And I get that. But that's the frustrating part, is that there is so much hype. There's so much expectation. And it's not the thing that really, I think, threw a lot of gasoline on this fire when it comes to expectation of Cowboys is the national media this year. Everyone in the national media believed, they didn't think that the Cowboys were a fraud. They didn't think it was the fake Cowboys. They really bought into it.
Because to be very clear, they were not fraudulent early on. Like, early
exactly.
on. But because they won, they won it, like, and that's the thing, because people say, well, you know, you said this. You're like things change. Like, early on in the season, they did things that they had never done before. Like, they were exercising demons. And then obviously all the demons came home to roost.
Then it just went freaking straight downhill. I'm thinking, what the happened?
Like, you said you feel bad for the fans. There was a tweet I saw on Monday from Chris Vernon. This tweet was from Chris Vernon, who does a great job for Spotify and right. The Ringer. But he tweeted, "Don't you ever call a Cowboys fan a bandwagon fan as long as you live. Nobody would ever choose this torture for over 20 years." Nobody. But you're right. Like
that's
point. It's just, that's why, I don't know. I'm still kind of sorting all of my thoughts. Because.
Hey, babe, by the way, no one can see this, but is that Mike McCarthy when they
unveiled
that, was that for?
This is the Crystal Cat.
Word?
Yeah, well, it's all of them. It's like awareness for all cancer. That's why it's got all the different colors.
It's a nice hoodie. It looks. Like.
I know. People said it looked like a
cupcake. Fill it out quite as much as McCarthy, though.
Man, I'm so out on him. Like, I really cannot support you coming out and blaming officials like this. And I cannot support that's the kind of cult. And that's the thing, dude. Like, they did that at every turn this season. They never, ever, ever owned up to a loss ever. They after week one, when they lost to the Bucks, I mean, it was week one and we were all sitting here like, well, they went toe to toe with the Bucks, and we kind of like gave them compliments. And then when they lost to the Broncos, they all like the only accountability they had was like, well, we were buying ourselves. You know, they didn't give the Broncos any credit. They just said, well, we were kind of, you know, smelling ourselves a little bit too much. Then they blamed the refs after losing to the Raiders. They blamed everything else after losing to Kansas City. They blamed the refs after losing to the Cardinals. I cannot endorse a head coach who has created a culture of finger pointing. There's no accountability.
You know what I've learned from this whole season, RJ, is that I mentioned earlier they were 6-0 versus NFC East opponents. I sure in the hell hope the NFC East becomes a more credible division. And these teams become, they got to get better. There's got to be a level of competition where it's this so bad in the NFC East. And maybe that will, maybe they'll measure up. Maybe they, and we can get gauge on this team, because every team that they've blown up and they've done great things has been against the NFC East, and we've seen where that's got. You know, look at the Eagles against the Bucks. It was a, it's just amazing how bad this division has gotten over the last few years.
Yeah, and you know, we'll see if they even win it. You know, that'll be something we talk about. The NFC East has not had a repeat champion since 2004, the longest run in the NFL without longest run that a division has not had a back-to-back champion. So we'll see if the Cowboys can be the first. Tony, I mean, the season's over. We're not going anywhere, but it sucks. It sucks.
Life goes on. There's a song, Life Goes On.
We'll there's a lot of songs that say that.
We'll have to watch other teams play. We'll have to figure out which team we're going to cheer for. And I really would like to see a matchup in the NFC Championship game. The two GOATs going at it, A-Rod and Tom Brady.
I mean, I would love to see. We got that last year. I would love to see it again. I really don't want the Packers to win the Super Bowl. You know what's going to be super annoying? And I'll say right now, Tony, is if the Packers blow out the 49ers this weekend, it will be the narrative will be, well, the 49ers went to Mike McCarthy's house and they beat him, and then they went to face Mike McCarthy's old team that fired him and got waxed. You know what I'm saying? It will just be further proof that Mike McCarthy is not it, and that will just be annoying to deal with. I want the Bills.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's going to be a difficult game for them to play in the frozen tundra, but I'd like to see it. I'd like to see him make it a game. I really would. I'm a Matthew Stafford fan. I really am.
I hope you're right. I want the Bills to win the Super Bowl. That's where I'm at.
They look tough.
They look good.
And it's going to be a great game.
If they make it to the Super Bowl, they have to wear their old uniforms. I don't care. They got to wear the red helmets. You know, talking like
back ones.
Yeah, they got to wear them. They have to. That's the rule.
I did like Cincinnati, though. Cincinnati looks tough.
They look good, but I'm team Bills. Let's ride. Yeah. Tony, you said it all. We did it all. Yeah. We'll be back next week. Sorry, everybody.
Crying my coffee this morning.
Thanks a lot, everyone. We'll see you next week. This was the 750.